Merkle Media.
What does the goddamn line say, Tony?
Please do not use gendered language.
Then what? I'll be arrested, put in airport jail.
Well, you're going completely sideways, man.
It's a big club, and you ain't in it.
How dare you?
Mr. Speaker, the President of the United States.
I'm Chris Hansen with Dave on NBC.
Jack Mary's Tech Theratrix.
Hi, I'm Spartacus.
Steve Jackson, Sacramento, he, him.
Steven Seagal.
Sex offender guy.
I'm Keith Morris.
This is Muammar Gaddafi.
I'm Rick James, bitch.
Sorting through the lies.
The hijacker's passport was found blocks from the World Trade Center crash site, if you can believe that.
We cannot track $2.3 trillion in transactions.
And uncovering the centuries-long plan for world domination.
Learning about Cuba, having some food.
Let's talk about Chinese people.
Have you ever been in a Turkish prison?
Swangled in Fort Lauderdale.
I have sent six of my Libyan missiles to blow up the Sears hardware department.
Nothing could be more fun than jumping off a cliff with two German bisexuals.
Oh, you English are so superior, aren't you?
Thank you, comrade.
And now, macroaggressions.
That's what assholes call it.
With your host.
Buddy, I don't know who you are, but you're about to get chlamydia.
Charlie Robinson.
Hey, Whitey, where's your hat?
You want to drop the blame on Charlie and say it's all Charlie's fault?
He was a retard.
I get some goddamn diuretic.
Welcome to Macroaggressions. I'm your host, Charlie Robinson. Hope everybody had a great holiday season and New Year's. Your hangover, hopefully, is wearing off. We've got a lot of business to get to in the year 2022, so we're going to need all you people operating at your full maximum abilities. So, we'll start with where we always start. Thank you to our sponsors. Just in general, thank you to all the sponsors that have been here with this little show of mine. I couldn't do it without you. I mean, I literally couldn't do it without you. I think my wife would probably kill me if I didn't have sponsors for the show, but I certainly tried to pick at least the ones that make the most sense, the ones that are aligned with us philosophically, the ones that are providing a service that actually works and a service that we actually need, things like that. So I'm grateful to them, all of them. And I've been talking about them in the beginning of the shows since we've started the show. So thanks to all of them for being a part of Macroaggressions. I certainly do appreciate you guys. I hope you appreciate me getting the word out to my listeners. And like I said before, whenever I'm talking to a sponsor or a potential sponsor, I always make sure to tell them. I feel it's important for them to know that we've got an educated group here. That they don't need a refresher course in a lot of things, that they can kind of pick up they can understand where we're coming. They're professionals. I have a lot of doctors and nurses and people in academia that are listeners that reach out to me. So I'm glad, I'm grateful. The sponsors get to know that they have an educated audience to talk to about their products, and I'm grateful that we don't have to start off at square one every time we're discussing the things that are happening out there in the world. So thank you to all of you for being smart, I guess. I don't know, for sharing the show with the friends and family around you. Did you guys have to trigger any of your family members during the holidays, or did you accidentally trigger them? Were there red pill moments? I must know. I have to know if there's something totally insane that happened to you during your holiday. And we'll just call that, that includes, let's just say the tail half of December. So that's whatever religion you're into, whatever holiday event you're into, New Year's, wherever you get together with groups of people in defiance of the vaccine mandates and the masking and all that horseshit. I'm curious if you guys have any good stories out there. So if you do, go to the website, theoctopusofglobalcontrol.com, and send me a message and let me know what sort of insanity you faced during the during the year or during the holiday season. I didn't have anything bad happen. I didn't have anything like that. I had someone try to tell me I had to put a mask on to walk into a restaurant. But I lumbered them. I just walked right around them and just like they weren't even there. I didn't even acknowledge their existence. And that seems to work. So that's my strategy. What is yours? What's been working? So back to the sponsors real quick. Thanks to True Hemp Science, man. They're making great stuff. They are making hemp-based CBD products that are working. I don't know the science about it. I don't understand all the details of it. I know that I've been trying several types of CBDs, creams, oils, kind that has THC in it, kind that doesn't have THC. I've tried a bunch. I can't say I've tried them all, but I've tried a bunch and nothing really did it for me. Nothing really fixed my shoulder. So the guys over at True Hemp Science, that was it. That was my only sort of criteria in the back of my mind. It's like, man, it better make my shoulder feel good. And it has, and it works. And that's my only, that's all I can say about it because that's my personal experience. I can't say it's going to work for you necessarily. I hope it will. I think it will, but I don't know that. The only way you'll find out is if you buy it and you try it yourself. So if you've got some lingering aches and pains, the types of things that you think CBD might be right for, then do this. Just go to the website, read up about it, read up about why they're doing it with hemp and why that matters. You can go to truehempscience.com/macroaggressions and use the promo code macro on your way out to save yourself some money. They're real good about throwing in like little freebies and things like that. So they'll give you free shipping on orders over $150. They'll throw in a number 81 distillate, which is like a $26 value if you spend more than $65. So if there's someone in your life, you know, I know the holiday season's over, but if there's someone that you saw hobbling around during your Christmas parties or something, and you feel like maybe they would, you know, their knee wouldn't be hurting so bad if they just had some CBD action going on, then, you know, maybe buy them a bottle or at least check it out and see what you think. Also, our newest sponsor is Heelan 951. It's pronounced Heelan. It's spelled Halen, H-A-E-L-A-N 951.com. You can check that out /macro. I'll tell you, this is an interesting one because it is what this is. They've only got three products. They've got a greens powder, which is something you just mix with water and drink, which is fantastic. They sent me that too. But really, their flagship product is the fermented soy beverage. It comes in like a bottle that you open up and keep refrigerated. It is a highly concentrated soybean beverage with a 30-year history of improving health. It's 100% organic. It's non-GMO. It's highly concentrated, so you don't have to take that much of it. It's nitrogen fermented soybean beverage. It's not made from your average soybeans. In fact, not only that, it's made from Mongolian soybeans because everybody knows Mongolians are better at two things, soybeans and barbecue, right? So they've got that going for it. In the United States, listen, we have poor soil. We have weird growing standards. Mongolia doesn't have that. We use pesticides. We have GMOs. That's the stuff that's really screwing these kids up. Look, not just kids, but everybody that's going down that soy boy path, you know, it's got, and I, God knows I've beat these guys verbally with my soy boy takes and everything. So it was important for me to find out from the people over at Heelan 951 whether or not we're talking about the same sort of soy products. And they said, no, absolutely not. It's night and day. It's totally, completely different. He said, first of all, what we do is we quality crop always comes from Mongolia. We use the fermentation and nitrogen fermentation process, which changes everything. And we have organic growing. So they're doing something different. It is not the greatest tasting drink, but I'll tell you what, it's not the worst either. It's not, I'll tell you this though. I kind of goof on the way it tastes. I'll take this over traditional vitamins any day. And I'll tell you why, because I have about a 50-50 kill rate when it comes to like traditional vitamins of me taking the vitamins and then 20 minutes later throwing up. They just don't work with my stomach for whatever reason. So I'm I'm sensitive to that, and that, you know, I always am a little bit hesitant when it comes to vitamins. So even though I will admit that this wasn't the best, you know, it's not the best tasting drink, it didn't upset my stomach at all. So, you know, there's that. So that's a good factor, at least for me. So look, again, like anything, just read up on it. Just check it out. See if it's right for you. You go to halen951.com, halen951.com/macro. Take a look, see if it's right for you. If it is, use the promo code macro on your way out. Save yourself some money. I'm going to put all the links for all of the sponsors. They're always in the description of the show. So if you're out doing something active, you're not in front of a computer, or you're not someplace where you can write it down, don't sweat it. You can always go back to this episode if you're thinking about it and take a look and see what our sponsors are up to. Oh, on a side note, and this is not technically sponsor related, but this is just a friend of the show who I have had interaction with over the last year or so. Good dude. He's got a, you know, I've been talking about prepping, obviously. I've been talking about you got to get your stuff ready, and, you know, we owe the preppers an apology, and don't freak your family out, but maybe go to the grocery store and get some extra stuff. One of the components to this that I didn't have a lead for was seeds, but I do now. Like I said, there's no official relationship between me and this company, but my friend over at daddygarden.org sent me some seeds, and I went on the website. I didn't know they were coming. He just sent them and said, you've been talking about this stuff. This is what I do. You probably didn't know I was in the seed business either, and I didn't. And so he sent me these seeds. So now I've got a box with all kinds of cool seeds. And so then I went on the website and took a look. It's all really cheap. So if you are in the market for seeds, this is a guy who, like I said, there's no official relationship here. I'm not compensated in any way for saying this, except that you need seeds. You can buy them anywhere, and you don't, you know, why not get organic seeds from this guy? So friend of the show. So daddygarden.org, take a look. Pretty simple sort of layout here. Tons of different stuff, fruits, vegetables, all organic. Something to consider. So take a look. And thanks for sending me the seeds. I appreciate it. I'll get to planting it. Since we've had Jim Gale on from Food Forest Abundance, I've been talking to other people that are in this grow network as well. Damn, I might just turn into a farmer after all of this. Wouldn't that be wild? That's so insane. I know nothing about farming, but that won't stop me. Something I do know a little bit about, though, and it's the topic of this episode, that is statism as a religion. And I think that, you know, when I go to a Norcapulco, I've been a couple of times in, and for those that don't know, I fucking talk about it all the time. Anarcapulco, it's the largest anarchist convention in Acapulco, Mexico. It's put on in February by Jeff Berwick and his crew. I wrote a book with Jeff, so that's kind of how our relationship is. One of the Anarcapulco conference, I've always described it as a three-legged stool. It's got anarchy, you know, this sort of anti-government or anti-state component to it. It has a really big crypto component, which I think fits nicely, and also health and wellness. So I think that when you get into these conversations about breaking away from the state or breaking away from state control, you do that, you know, you come up with these ideas or you talk about these plans because you need to, and they're good plans and good ideas, but you've also got to have a backup. You've got to have a plan for once you leave. You've got to have a plan for, well, okay, we're going to tell the state to take a hike. How are we going to educate our kids? Okay, well, that's that. If you go to Anarcapulco, they've got like unschooling, homeschooling sessions, seminars, and classes you can take. And that's where I met David Rodriguez, who I had on the show, talking about his Gatto Institute and all of the homeschooling programs. So when you break away from the state, you have to fill that void with some things. So you've got to fill like the currency component, what are we going to do for money? Well, crypto comes in. Well, what are we going to do for education? We're not going to have public schools to indoctrinate our kids. We're going to have to do that ourselves. Okay, fine. Let's talk about the schooling component. You can get involved in that. So what does this look like? What does breaking away from the state look like, and what does it mean? And what is statism? You know, you hear this term. That someone's a statist, or that's a statist sort of behavior. So statism, let's define it. It's the practice or doctrine of giving centralized government control over economic planning and policy. Or another way to say it is the art of government and governing a state. That's how you define statism. Practice or doctrine of giving centralized government control over economic planning and policy. Let's think about that for a second. Let's think about our current government. And I'm in America. I know that this is an international show. Just think of your own government, wherever you live. I'm sure it sucks just as bad as the government that I'm living under. So think of them, and think of the morons that are put up there in charge of the government. Think of the dumb policies. Think of the ways that they squander money and everything. And just remember that they want you to give centralized control over economic planning to some of the worst and most corrupt and incompetent people on the planet, politicians. Like, what could be worse than that? What a dumb idea. I mean, we already know that politicians are only get into office because they're able to talk, like, i.e. most likely bullshit people. They're able to fundraise, or they do what they're told And doing what you're told may come from the people that give you money. Maybe it comes from the people that you're going to wind up having to legislate with. Maybe it comes from forces above them. But you've got to be good at doing what you're told. And you've got to be good at bullshitting. And you've got to be good at raising money from rich people. Now, rich people don't give you money to get into politics just so that you'll have a great day and have a great career. They want something in return. So when you get into this game in the way that it's currently played with political campaigns, and we've got to raise money, we've got to get buttons and bumper stickers and run media ads and all this stuff, like, that costs money. And when you're begging for money, you may get money, but it'll come with strings attached. So the question is, how thick are those strings? And how much control do they have over you? So you've got people that walk into a position already owing somebody a favor, and you're going to put them in charge of the money. You're going to put them in charge of the economic planning and the policy. That sounds like a really bad way to do it. First of all, there's that the people that get into government, most of them are defective human beings anyway, not all of them, but most of them get in there for some sort of weird reason that isn't exactly what they tell you it is. Some of them go into government because they're psychopaths and they're drawn to power, positions of power and influence. And government, for all its shortcomings, it does have that. It is a position of power and influence and authority. And that's what crazy people like. They love that stuff. They love getting in positions and telling you what to do and telling you how to run your life. Meanwhile, if you look at their own personal finances or their personal relationships, a lot of times it's disastrous. So it's you know, the worst type of people that get it, that are drawn to this position for usually all the wrong reasons. Not, again, I know I'm painting with a broad brush, and someone's like, well, there's this politician, they're pretty good. Okay, all right, I grant them that there's probably a couple out there that are in it for the right reasons, but just look at the dipshits that go on CNN and MSNBC and Fox News, all these Congress people that you've, House of Representative from North Dakota, and you're like, I've never heard of this person, right? They manage such a small little piece, and they go on Fox News or MSNBC, and it's obvious within a minute of listening to them talk that these are not the people that you want to be in charge of anything. But we've allowed that to happen because we are all, though in different religious groups, we all come together under the religion of the state. And that's a dangerous place to be, because like many religions, you have to be very careful about who's in charge and who's leading you, what they're telling you, what they're not telling you, and how they're trying to modify and manipulate your behavior. So let's start with this. So in America, and for all of you international listeners, you may be like this may come as a surprise to you. But for Americans, this is going to be totally normal. If you've gone through the school system in America, when you're a little kid, one of the first things you do in the morning, and this is red pilling. This is when red pills make you reevaluate like everything that you've done in your life. You're like, oh my God, I had no idea how crazy this is. I never even examined it. But let's talk about the fact that one of the first things that you do in the morning as a child in the United States of America, when you go to school, is you stand up at your desk, put your hand over your heart, like everybody in the classroom is told to do, and you turn towards the American flag and you say the Pledge of Allegiance. I swear to God, that still happens. This is not just in China. It happens in America like every morning. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, indivisible. One nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Propaganda still in my head. I didn't read that. I remembered it. Now think about that. Think about that as sort of when you've got little kids and you're layering on information, and you do that base layer, right, where it's like reading, writing, arithmetic. There's something else that is happening along with that base layer, and it is state-sanctioned propaganda that's happening in the form of a Pledge of Allegiance. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America? I don't. I love America. I love the people. I don't love the government. I don't pledge allegiance to a flag. Now, some people, that might rub the wrong way. Some people say, you know, that went through military, you know, the flag is a big fucking deal to them. I subscribe to the George Carlin philosophy when it comes to, well, let's be honest, when it comes to just about everything. But in particular on this point, when he said, I consider flags to be symbols and I leave the symbols to the symbol-minded. I don't get all mushy. I don't tie a yellow ribbon around the old oak tree. I don't get super serious about the way you hold a flag and the way you fold a flag and all that stuff. You know, I don't. My dad was in the military when he was younger, I guess straight out of high school. When he passed away, I was given a folded American flag. You know, the way they fold it, because he was a veteran, you know, he had been in the military. So there's some sort of, I don't know, there's some sort of process where that happens. So I obviously have that, but I don't get all weepy about the flag. Especially when you see what has been done around this world by people wearing American flags on their uniforms. And to be fair, I understand the chain of command. I understand that the people at the bottom of the chain that are doing the shooting are doing the shooting because the people above them told them to do the shooting. I get all that. I truly do. I understand that. But, you know, Larkin Rose would have something to say about absolving those people of their responsibility just because they were following orders. You don't get off the hook just because you were following orders. I understand there's repercussions for not following orders and combat and military, all that stuff. I get it. I understand. But when they ask you to do something that is unspeakable and you do it, then it's on you. And how dare they order you to do that? But you did it. You brought it into being. It wouldn't have happened if it wasn't for you. So the sort of atrocities that have been committed in this world draped in American flags, and that it turns me off to it. To me, it's a piece of fabric. I get it. I understand that. I don't salute the flag. I don't put my hand over my heart and say the Pledge of Allegiance. I just don't do that. I don't pledge my allegiance to these fucking maniacs. I refuse to do that. Do I love America? Yeah, I love the people. I like the concept. I like some of the things that we've done over the years, but I've unpacked so many lies over my time on this planet where I've looked at something that we were told that we did that was great, only to find that there was an alternative story to it. And it's like, well, yeah, it's not exactly the truth about how it was portrayed. This actually happened. And what I keep finding time after time is despicable acts committed by America. So that's my state. That's the state in which I live under. Do I pledge allegiance to that state? No fucking way. Maybe as a kid when I didn't know better, but I don't do it. I don't do it anymore. So let's talk about what statists believe. Statists believe that it is moral for the state to threaten or initiate force against individual conscience. So agents of the state, be they politicians, bureaucrats, police, military, these are agents of the state. Statists believe that agents of the state can legally do things that would be criminal for other people to do. Meaning, as long as you have a costume on that says I'm a police officer, or I have a costume on that says I'm a soldier, then you're allowed to go murder somebody. But if you took those costumes off and shot the same guy in the same scenario, you'd go to prison for that. Statists believe that discrepancy is no big deal. They think that that's totally fine. And on top of that, they think that a man's life belongs to the state. And that, of course, is where I have a huge problem with it. My life doesn't belong to the state. I didn't have any say in where I was geographically born. Born in America. Some people spend many, many years trying to get out of the place where they were born to get to a different place. A lot of times it's America. So it's hard to say everything about America is shitty all the time. That wouldn't be accurate. But it also wouldn't be accurate to try and pretend that we're the good guys, because we're not. Let me preface that. When I say we're not the good guys, what I mean is the American government, the American military, those people. I'm not talking about the individual person. I'm not even really talking about the individual person that's a private in the military that's being sent to God knows where to shoot people that didn't do anything to him. You know, that guy's got a moral dilemma that they're going to have to analyze the rest of their lives. So I have a problem with the concept of the state. And we sort of got a little bit of an education on how bad the state can be from our perch in America looking at China, or really wherever you are looking at China. You see that as state-run media, state-controlled this or that, you know, state making the decision when they built the Three Gorges dams, where they just said, we're going to put these Three Gorges dams here, here, and here, and we're going to build this up, and it's going to flood this place where all these villages have been for 450 years, and the government just says, tough shit. We'll relocate you, we'll move you somewhere else, but this is what we're doing. That's the state. State making those decisions. I'm not into that. So, but that's the Chinese state. They make unilateral decisions. There's no room for input from anybody. They're not interested in what the people's opinions are. They're not getting all bent out of shape about environmental protection agencies or any of that stuff. The state in China makes the call on everything. So let's read, I want to read a quote from Ayn Rand talking about this. And if you aren't familiar with Ayn Rand, she was not the warmest woman in the world. You know, you can read some of her books. She's kind of a pull yourself up from your bootstraps type of gal, or don't, doesn't matter. If you're not willing or able to pull yourself up by your bootstraps, then her next thought was, then get the fuck out of my way. You know, so this is what she had to say talking about statism. A statist is a man who believes that some men have the right to force, coerce, enslave, rob, and murder others. To be put into practice, this belief has to be implemented by the political doctrine that the government, the state, has the right to initiate the use of physical force against its citizens. How often force is used, against whom, to what extent, for what purpose, and for whose benefit are irrelevant questions. The basic principle and the ultimate results of all statist doctrines are the same: dictatorship and destruction. The rest is only a matter of time. So I can't argue with that. It is, it's an interesting thing, the religion of the state and the state's behavior. The statism, and this is how I put it in the hypocrisy book, statism is the utopian ideal that just the right amount of violence used by just the right people in just the right way can perfect society. And I think that that's dangerous. I think that when you come into government and you have the monopoly on violence, you work well with violence. You are you control the military, you control the police, you have the laws that tell you you can be violent against certain people certain times for them doing when they do certain things. The question becomes, whose hands are those powers in? And we know that if you grant the state powers, additional powers, powers that they didn't have, if you grant the state additional powers during times of emergencies, the state will create emergencies in which to justify the use of those special powers. So it becomes a feedback loop where you can't get out of it. So you can't ever give the state special powers. Like, you know, you're going to have to take your shoes off before you get on this airplane because 19 Arab hijackers with box cutters, and you know the story, and maybe they had liquid explosives, you know, liquid explosives that blew up three buildings with two planes in the shoes of Mohammed Atta. I mean, the whole thing is totally preposterous. But think about that. You gave up rights in exchange for security, and you get neither. It's the Ben Franklin. You think Ben Franklin would take his shoes off to go through TSA? He would start shooting, I assume. I don't know. With his musket, the TSA, which, by the way, you could probably sneak a musket through TSA. They're so brain dead over there. They don't know what's going on. Do you ever see, I don't know if you, a side note, but kind of a funny side note. I saw a video, and this was a while ago, and it had to have been at least like 8 years ago I saw this video. It was a video of a dude who was filming himself. I think he had a buddy involved in it too. And they had hidden cameras the way they did it. They were going through TSA. They were going through the body scanner machine with a fucking samurai sword.
down like the side of his legs and everything. And he showed himself, he showed the sword. Then he showed himself walking to, and I couldn't find it. I didn't see any edits or any cuts in it. I had every reason to believe it was real. And apparently they had done it with more than just samurai swords. And then he put his camera on like the, in the tray that goes through the metal detector. It was filming the whole time. And like, he had it kind of like aimed at him. He went through and he didn't get detected. Like with a samurai sword, like strapped to his leg. Anyway, I guess I get on these tangents when talking about the stupidity of the TSA. But this is the problem, is that when you give up these temporary rights, take your shoes off to get on the airplane, then we're still doing it. And we've been living through this, the last 2 years of the COVID, and we've been watching the same thing happen. If you scare the public enough, they're willing to give up their rights to the state in exchange for protection. Well, how do you know that the state's not the one that's in charge of being the boogeyman? Which, of course, they are. That's my point, is that you're giving up your rights to the state. And the state is the one that is doing the things to you that's causing you fear. And they're saying, well, just give up your rights and we'll make the fear go away. They're the fear factory. The United States government is in the fear manufacturing business. That's what they do. That's how they control people. So this religion of the state is kind of necessary. If nobody listened to the state, they couldn't scare you. And that's how they do this whole thing. I got a great quote in the Hypocrisy book from Lawrence Reed. It says, have you ever noticed how statists are constantly reforming their own handiwork? Education reform, healthcare reform, welfare reform, tax reform. The very fact that they're always busy reforming is an implicit admission that they didn't get it right the first 50 times. It's true. So we've watched statism plus a pandemic turn into tyranny. And I don't know why anyone would be surprised that that is happening, because that's the formula that works. When you add statism to anything, you get something very different. You add a pandemic to statism, you get tyranny. You add big business to statism, you get fascism. You know, you add climate change, the scam of climate change, to statism, and you're going to get climate lockdowns. You're going to get ESG scores. You're going to get social credit scores. You're going to get all this stuff. Whenever you take things and add the state to it, everything gets worse. Like, just think about it in your own set of worldly experiences. When you go to a government-run agency, Department of Motor Vehicles, or dealing with the IRS, how many times do you feel like, God, you know, I just met the savviest person there at the DMV. We just got everything done right away. I was out of there and before I knew it. No, everything is gummed up. The whole system's fucked up. It doesn't work right. Everything takes longer. It's filled with inefficiencies. That's the state. There's no competition. You know, if you have two restaurants next to each other, and one restaurant is fantastic, service is great, food is great, reasonably priced, and the place next to it, every time anybody you know goes there, they get food poisoning. Well, guess what? The marketplace will take care of that one. It will eventually sort this problem out. They'll get their food quality under control, or they'll go out of business. But when you're the state, what are you going to do? You're going to look for a different government inside this state? Good luck. There isn't one. It's just the state. So when you have no competition, you have no incentivization structure to make things better. When it's not your money that you're spending, how frugal are you going to be with it? Especially when sort of the at least in America, I can't speak to other countries, but in America, there's this really unusual behavior that comes with when, whether it's local government, state government, meaning the 50 states, not the state as a whole, local government, state government, or federal government. There is a mentality that is hardwired in now, which is, if I'm given a budget of, say, $100 million to fix the problems of whatever office I'm in some Department of Water, all right? And I get $100 million every year to fix the water, and I can do it for $70 million a year. If I do that, and that other $30 million doesn't get spent, then they don't give me $100 million the next year. They give me $70 million. They'll give me $40 million. They'll say, well, you only needed $70. You've got $30 left over. We're not going to give you $100 million every year like we normally do, because you don't need to, you seem to not need it. So knowing this, state and local governments and federal governments too, they wind up, in order to justify that budget, they wind up spending the rest of the money on stupid shit. And then they say, look, I spent it all. I need $100 million next year. And so next year, they get $100 million. Maybe they get $110 million because of inflation, which is transitory, which means non-existent. So the state runs in a way that is inconsistent with business. You can't run, well, I shouldn't say you can't run the state like you run the business. They just don't run the state like the business. There's no accountability. It's other people's money. We got to cut costs. We've got to improve efficiency. All those things that you would do if you're trying to run a business and make it the best business possible so you could be profitable. The state's not interested in being profitable. That's not their goal. Their goal is control. And they've taken the profit motive out of it. So there's no incentive structure inside the state to be good with money. The only incentive is to be bad with money, is to take money and spend it so that you can justify getting even more bad money the following year. You do too good of a job and you will be punished. And that's why it's been hardwired into the system now, because at first it wasn't like that. Some people were doing good jobs at the government and they were saving money. And then they realized that their budgets shrunk the following year and they had to fire a bunch of people or whatever, you know, or maybe they were able to, you know, bring it in under budget this year, but the following year, there's going to be some additional expenses and they're going to need that money, but they don't have it. Now things start to break down. The water is broken in Flint, Michigan. That's a political decision. That's the reason why the water was all screwed up there. So, you know, the whole point of the state is very different than the point of being in business. And so you have to recognize that and understand that where if I'm running a company selling widgets, the list of things that I'm focused on is going to be different than the list of things that the state is going to be focused on. I'm going to be interested in doing a good job, making a profit. I'm going to be interested in making sure that the people that work for me are taken care of so that they continue to work for me. They get better at their job and I don't have to replace people every day. So there's incentive structures that are built in, not all financial, but some, where a business has different reasons for doing things than the state. Not all businesses are run correctly. Obviously, when you have that profit motive in there, then you have a new set of problems that can arise, which is, well, I'll just take this toxic waste and dump it in the river because it's cheaper. And, you know, it's all about profit. So I don't have to spend the money to dispose of this toxic waste the right way. I'm just going to dump it in the river, like Monsanto or Chevron or who are all these companies that keep getting busted doing all that. I'm not trying to say that business and the private sector is the way out of all of this. You still have to keep an eye on that because the same sort of psychopathic traits that lure people into positions of power inside government are the same sorts of things that they like in high-ranking positions of big business. So you have to kind of keep an eye on it. But when you're talking about the state, the statism is a dangerous religion that has been responsible for more murders than anything else. I think the number I saw was in the 20th century, 261 million people were murdered by the state. That is the number one killer of people aside from natural causes and aside from COVID. Obviously, COVID has killed 9 trillion people this year. It is amazing that I know it's true. Rochelle Walensky with crazy eyes told me that. But look, if society needs to use violence and the state to enforce their ideas, then maybe their ideas suck. You know, because you shouldn't need that layer of you shouldn't need force to make people do what you want them to do. Build a better system. Build a sort of system that doesn't require force, and then you don't have to force people to use your system. It works a lot better when you're not ordering people around. That takes a lot of resources. It's super inefficient. People get resentful of it. People fight back. You've got to build a different system that doesn't use threats of force to enforce ideas. That's what the state does. That's how they manage their business, is through the use of violence and through the use of threats about maybe putting you in a cage for a long, long time, or separating taking your children away from you, or something like that. So the prevailing thought of people trying to describe society is that without government, the criminals would steal from them, rule over them, assault them, take them as prisoners, group them into mobs and chase them down, and use brute force to make them comply with their demands. People are terrified that without the government, the criminals will do all of those things. But in reality, that just perfectly described the government. They're the ones that are stealing from us, ruling over us, assaulting us, taking us as prisoners, chasing us down with mobs, using brute force. It's not the criminals. It's not the random criminals out there that are doing all of that stuff. Yeah, maybe a little. Those are disorganized criminals that are out for themselves. I'm not worried about them. I'm worried about the organized crime. And I've had Etienne de la Boetie Squared on here before. I hung out with him in Mexico. We've done some Union of the Unwanted shows. And his book, Government, the Biggest Scam, he talks about that. He says, don't call it government anymore. Call it organized crime. And he's right. It's organized crime. And it's organized by the state. Not all states are created equally. Not all states are as bad as the other ones. But it's state-based. And look, the argument for government is that if the citizens do not have a government, then the people left unchecked will do evil things. The problem is that the government is composed of the very people that were left unchecked. So, look, there's a saying that was held up over the years that accurately states that when the mob governs, man is ruled by ignorance. When the church governs, man is ruled by superstition. And when the state governs, he is ruled by fear. And that is where we are. That's where we've been for a while. We're ruled by fear. And if you don't believe that, go to the grocery store and see how many people are wearing masks after they've been double jabbed and boosted and all that stuff. And you tell me that I'm wrong about us being ruled by fear. And again, since I mentioned Anarchapulco, I mentioned anarchy conferences and things like that, there is a misconception that a world in which there are No masters and no slaves would be total anarchy because it would be lawless and without rules for people to follow. But I would like to make sure that I'm crystal clear on the definition of anarchy. Anarchy does not mean no rules. It means no rulers. And I think that's a huge difference because the people that I've met that are in that anarchist anarchist group, you know, that you could probably easily define as being in that category. Some of the nicest, smartest, most thoughtful people that I have ever met in my life. I'm not kidding. Real, forward-thinking, intelligent people. They're not running around with Molotov cocktails and Antifa masks. Those people are LARPing retards that are pretending to be revolutionaries. They wouldn't know a revolution if it kicked them right in the nuts with their purple hair, you know, and was financed by George Soros. They wouldn't recognize that. The anarchist community is about being left alone. Like, we're going to do our thing. You do your thing. You think this statism is working well with all the murders and the inefficiencies and the insanity and psychopathy that runs through it? If that's what you like, you can live in that world. What they're trying to say is, let's reimagine a different version of this. And it's not going to be perfect. It's not going to be without flaws. Not everybody's going to be a good actor. Obviously, there'll be some people that go in and screw some things up. But that doesn't mean that we shouldn't at least try something different. I think it's reasonable for people to see what we've been living through this past 2 years. Well, frankly, the past 50 years, but especially the last 2 years. And not, you know, like, how do you live through this and not have the thought, maybe we could do this better. Maybe we could do this a different way that didn't, you know, demonize people that want personal sovereignty over their own health directives. They don't want to be told by the state that they can't fly on an airplane because they have to inject themselves with cooties and none of that. Like, if you've been living through this, and we all have, if you've been living through this with your eyes open, you see this and the thought has got to have come through your mind. There's got to be a better way to do this. And not everybody's going to be on board with it, but I don't care. So look, anarchy means actual freedom, but it does have a cost. It means that, look, the traditional way of thinking about the world is outdated, and that's scary. That's scary to a lot of people that have never even considered the concept of truly being free, and they have a form of Stockholm syndrome for their captors. They're the state, the government in which they live under. It's not their fault necessarily, because it's hard to imagine a world run totally differently when the only world you've ever known is run by the state. So it's understandable for people to have a mental block or to be defensive about that and say, well, listen, I that's all well and good, man, but that'll never work. Well, how do you know? Well, because who would build the roads? Who would build the roads? That's the argument. It's like, you mean like now when the government hires people and pays them to build the roads? You mean like that? Like, we couldn't figure out how to hire a company to build the roads? Well, who would collect the taxes? Listen, you got to understand the Federal Reserve. Your taxes are not going to pay for those roads, just so you know. Let's get crystal clear on what your taxes for the state are getting used to pay for. In America, the Federal Reserve was created in 1913. Would you like to take a wild guess when the Internal Revenue Service, the tax collection component of this, was created? Yeah, 1913 as well. It's the collection arm of the Fed. The money that they're collecting in taxes is going to pay the interest that your government agreed to on the debt that it just printed up. It just borrowed from the Fed. So if the government is borrowing at 4% interest, whatever, I'm making that number up. Let's just say it averages out to 4% interest. The money that's used to pay that interest, it's not coming from the government. It's coming from your taxes. That's the reason why they created the IRS. So this concept of, well, we're just, you know, without the government, who would build the roads, is a dumb argument. It's a entry level argument into this, but it's understandable also, because a lot of people are having they have a difficult time envisioning what that might look like. And a lot of Americans have a hard time doing that because they've never left the country. You know, I think the number I saw was 70% of all Americans have never left the country. That's embarrassing. Get yourself a passport, man. Get out there and go and see the world. And I'm not talking about just resorts and places like that. I'm talking about like go get into it. Because you're going to see how some governments work better than yours. You're going to see how some governments work worse than yours. You're going to see how governmental policies in places like Venezuela affect the currency, and how the currency then tends to hyperinflate, and then the people suffer. So if you want to understand how to run a better state, you need to understand how to run a better currency. So again, that's one of the reasons why I think it's so smart what Jeff and the team did with Anarchapulco, bringing in the crypto component. Obviously, they're crypto guys. I mean, they have not just the dollar vigilante, but the crypto vigilante. So it wasn't a stretch for them to bring those in, but it was smart regardless that they did that, because it shows you, if we're going to talk about a world without the state, or if we're going to talk about creating our own version that doesn't have the components of the state, how are we going to transact commerce? How are we going to deal with that? So that crypto part is necessary. And that's the reason why those guys like stuff like Monero and Pirate Chain, you know, because it's like privacy coins. And so part of this is having to do with, the state thinking or believing that it has a right to stick its nose in your business. And a lot of these people that are against the state say, no, you don't have that right. And any chance I get to conduct business without you knowing about it, I'm going to take that opportunity, whether that's cash, whether that's privacy slanted cryptos, like Monero and Pirate Chain and other coins, like, you know, there's others out there. Those are appealing to people because of the privacy. Not that they're going to be drug dealers or go buy guns with them. Maybe they will. I don't know. But it's just it's none of your business component that I absolutely love. I think that, you know, it's incremental for a lot of people, wrapping their heads around the concept of living in a world without the state, because you're so used to doing things like voting and all that. And you go, okay, well, let's just say you're in the camp that voted for Trump in 2020 in a stolen election. And I will go to my grave saying that they stole that election. And I'm not a Trump guy, and I'm obviously not a Biden guy, but I will never be convinced that 80 million people voted for Joe Biden. But let's just say that you're still sort of like processing that, and you're going, there's got to be a better system than this voting, right? Good. Go with that thought. You're on the right track. Keep going. Voting in an insane and criminal system is like thinking that just by changing the driver, someone can magically fix the car. If you're driving a broken down car, doesn't matter who the driver is. You got to fix the car. And look, the car that America has been driving needs to be sent to the junkyard immediately. It's broken beyond repair because of the psychopaths that have been driving it, like in a demolition derby for the past 50 years. They've been drunk on power. They've been distracted by being on the phone with their donors, and they've been picking up hitchhikers that managed to cross the border and ask for a free ride. I mean, that's America. That's the American clown car these days, just driving around, picking up random Central American hitchhikers and driving them to far off cities and dumping them there and saying, shh, don't tell anyone. vote blue no matter who. That's America these days, and it's fucking embarrassing. But that's where we are. I think that people maybe have felt this way in the past, but I think given what we've gone through in the last 2 years, it's really come to the forefront, and that is the very real understanding that the government does not like self-sufficient people. They don't like them. They want you to be dependent on the government. You would think, so if you were in a healthy relationship with your government, with your state, it would be like your, it'd be like when you turn 18 and you finish school and you go off to college, or maybe you don't do college, you just go off and you leave the nest. You leave your parents, you still stay in touch with them, you love your parents, they love you, but you get to a certain age where you kind of need to do your own thing. You need to be a little bit more self-sufficient. The state hates that. They are the exact opposite. They're an unhealthy relationship. They're not a healthy relationship. They want you to stay in their basement so they can control you, and they can monitor you, and they can see who you're talking to and who you're interacting with and what you're doing and what sort of commerce you're participating in. They want control over you. Now think of the types of people that like that. The types of people that enjoy living in their parents' basement, enjoy being told what to do. Those are not the type of people that you would aspire to be. Those are typically losers. It's a loser mentality. It's a plantation mentality where you're just sort of stuck, not doing anything, not going anywhere, but at least your basic needs are met by the government. But in exchange, you have to live where they want you to live. You don't get to just pack up and go somewhere else. And you know, they're going to know who comes to visit you, and they're going to know what you're doing because they're paying, you know, the parents are paying the electric bills and they're paying for all this stuff. And if you mess with them, they'll shut your cable off. You know what I mean? Oh, you get on the wrong side of your parents when you're living in their basement, they shut the internet off. So that mentality we've got to get away from. And I think in the last 2 years, what we've seen is we've recognized that there are a lot of people that are very comfortable being told what to do. There's a lot of people that are statist cucks. They want the state to tell them where to go and what to do and what to inject and what to believe. It's just all this thinking is just, it's just hard. And I just, you know, oh, if only someone would tell me where to go and what to do and what to think and what to inject and what to eat and where to be and how, you know, who to hate. It'd just be so much easier. Now, I personally don't want anything to do with that. I'll make my own decisions. I'll make my own mistakes. I'm not asking to be set out into a world without consequences. I recognize that things will not always go well, but I'm okay with that because I trust in myself. I believe that that's the right thing to do. And I know that nobody is going to care more about me than me. The relationship that people have with the state, they most certainly can't say that. If you like this episode, if you want to connect with the show, you can reach me at the website, theoctopusofglobalcontrol.com. You can share the show with your friends and family members. You can follow me on Twitter at macroaggressions. There's a cool merch store that I've got if you go to the website, you can find it there. I know we just got done with the holidays. You're probably all spent out and everything. But if you are looking for some cool t-shirts, some stickers for your laptop, if you're looking for coffee mugs or hoodies or whatever, I got great stuff. And it doesn't just have macroaggressions on it. It's got things like, you know, Project Bluebeam and false flag and all these terms that mean something to us, won't mean anything to about 94% of the people in your office, and the other 6%, you'll get a good nod and they'll be like, I know what you're up to. I like what you're doing there with your false flag mug. So take a look, check it out. If it's right for you, pull the trigger. If not, that's cool too. Thanks everybody. I will talk to you soon.